There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And this is FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Jeff Poor filling in for Sean Sullivan on this brisk autumn Friday. Joining me today, holding my hand as I perform guest hosting duties, is Dalton Orwig over there on the board.
Not much hand-holding necessary, Jeff. You do a great job on here.
I'm always looking for pointers in this new endeavor.
I just turn the mics on and off. That's all I do.
Yeah, so fall's finally made it to Mobile, I think just in time for the last day of the regular season of high school football.
Uh-huh. Yep, and of course, with some big college football tomorrow, couldn't be a perfect time for the weather to move in like this, and should be cool for at least a couple days. I guess it'll warm up a little bit Sunday, but a great weekend on tap, especially Dr. Bill Williams told us this morning he gave it, I think, a rating between 1 and 2 of a 1.81, I think, is where he ended up. So it should be a good one.
I wonder what metrics go into formulating that.
Oh, tons of analytics, lots of computer programs ran, and actually, I think he just kind of... He figures it out on his own. I mean, Dr. Bill has been in the weather game for years and years and years. He just licks his finger, sticks it in the air, and comes up with a number.
It's kind of like the magic eight ball he shakes. Yeah. The number 1.81 appears on the ball. So we're 4 days from the election. I think that's what's on a lot of people's mind. At least I assume if you're listening to this program, you're probably interested in the midterm elections. A couple things going on today. We got some guests lined up to talk about that. At the bottom of the hour at 12:30, we have Alabama Senate President Pro Tem Dale Marsh coming in to join us, and he's going to talk a little bit about some of the Senate races. I think there's three in particular that are competitive, but they're in different parts of the state. Then at 1, we have a House candidate, Republican House candidate Steve McNair, who's running here in a tight race, and it looks winnable. We're going to get him to talk a little bit about that. I've heard some of his ads. I think he's running on an education lottery and some things like that, which is, you know, not something I think you traditionally hear Republican candidates talk about, but we're going to hear from him on that. And then at the bottom of the hour, at the bottom of the next hour, Secretary of State John Merrill is joining us. And I don't know, for those of you left out there that still listen to or read AL.com, they had a story yesterday about voter suppression up in the up in Huntsville, up in Madison County, and the rub on that was that there's college students at Alabama A&M and Oakman College, historically black college university, HBCU, that were being denied the vote. They were scrubbed from the voter registration because, as it turns out, the way the Secretary of State's office tracks votes or voters, as they send, and I believe I'm getting this correctly, they send out mailers, you know, to individuals and asking them if their information's up to date, that they live at this place, to make sure that they live there. And this was done right after the 2017 special election. And for whatever reason, there's a problem at Alabama A&M with their postal system, their mail delivery system. It all goes to one address, and then maybe it makes it to the individual students, maybe it doesn't. And these cards arrive, and if they don't hear back from these individuals, then they take them off the voter roll. But what happens is when they go show up to vote, it's not even a provisional ballot situation. All they have to do is this information correct? And they check and make sure the information, then they're automatically restored to the voter roll and they get to vote. But AL.com has this as voter suppression. So they put the story out there, and it seems like these, you know, I mean, think of the optics here. Historically black college students being denied the right to vote. seems really bad, and it seems like, you know, this happened. They say this happens in other elections. It happened in the 2016 presidential election, and the fear is it's going to happen on Tuesday. So they got this story out there, and I think it's the former president of the Madison County Democratic Party that's really pushing this, saying that the way they keep voters accountable, make sure that the voter rolls maintain their integrity, that you don't have anybody that's dead, anybody that's been incarcerated, or anyone that's moved still on these registers, is by sending these cards out, right? So The idea is to just to keep them current and keep everything up to date, so you don't have people that live in wherever that moved away from Alabama from voting. And as it turns out, you know, so often people are denied, you know, or said your voting information's not up to date or whatever. I really think this story is being pushed, and you saw a little bit of this in a couple of weeks ago in the 3rd Congressional District, Mike Rogers' Congressional District, with Mallorie Hagan, who's running for Congress as a Democrat. I think it's a get-out-the-vote effort. I think it's a shameless get-out-the-vote effort by Democrats that you could play this card, and you could say these mean Republicans don't want certain people voting that may lean Democrat or whatever. They don't want – I mean, essentially, they want to say – Republicans don't want black people voting, and that in their mind, and I don't know if they focus group this or if they poll tested it, that in their mind gets out the vote. And where it's pivotal in these last elections is I think Madison County in particular is one of these counties that it goes red, sometimes it goes blue, went very blue, very Democrat in the 17th special election for Doug Jones. But if you could get the turnout just right in Madison County and Huntsville, then you could possibly sway some big elections, right? Because there's a lot of people that live up there. So what I think is going on here, and I think it's just a shameless ploy to get out Democratic voters. And, you know, for whatever reason, this seems to be the thing this cycle. As I mentioned, it was in the it's been done by Mallory Hagan in Alabama, 3rd Congressional District. But probably the biggest place it's been done this cycle is over in Georgia. Stacey Abrams, who's running for governor, she's had a big press conference, and you know, you have like John Lewis and all these civil rights leaders come to the stage. They have a big press conference, and they essentially say they don't want black people to vote.
Mm-hmm.
What does that do? What's the psychology there? Well, I would think, well, I'm going to show them. I'm going to get out and vote. It's a good rallying cry, and they're trying some of that in Alabama now. This sets us up for our guest at the bottom of the next hour, John Merrill, who's going to come and explain all the nuance of this, how it works, and how no one's actually being being not allowed to vote, but the and all the ins and outs and why it works this way. And you know, if you listen to him, and I've heard him do a few interviews since the story came out, he's just following state and local election law and federal law. And I think, you know, if there's a problem there, then the place where this is solved is not 5 days out of an election. It's solved in the next legislative session. Maybe perhaps they need to put in some safeguards to keep this from happening. Maybe they say, hey, before we take this person off, we need to track them down. I don't know what that is, but it is very curious to me as to why and how this comes up just on the eve of an election, and it's very, very suspicious, I think.
You just answered what I was going to ask. So no way was this suspicious that this story was released with 5 days before we vote.
Right.
Because it came out yesterday, right?
Right, it came out yesterday. If, for example, the most polarizing election in probably our country's recent history, man, I'm not going to go back to the Civil War or nothing, but if African Americans had been denied the opportunity to vote in Alabama in the Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton election, let's consider that for a moment. They would have had the cameras down here. You would have had a bunch of media personalities down here, the usual race suspects here, and I think this would have been a bigger story if we've been talking about this. And more importantly, I think it would have been used in this last special election with Roy Moore and Doug Jones, and it wasn't. So I think that sort of tells you what you need to know with what's going on there. I think this is just a shameless ploy, and it's typical of kind of an AL.com sort of thing. And I, you know, we'll have to wait and see where their endorsements come, if they come this weekend. But I suspect they're going to endorse a lot of Democratic candidates.
All right. Looks like we have a caller on the line right now. We can go to the phones before we head to the break here. And Ron calling from Mobile. Hey, Ron.
Hi. As many people know, and as you know, Dalton, I'm a member of the Mobile County Board of Registrars.
Oh, is this Ron Reams?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay. Hey, Ron.
And I would like to set the record straight on something. There's been a lot of confusion because we had a third party, which I will decline to name, but we had a third party that sent out letters to everyone across the state, but I'm speaking mostly to Mobile County, that indicated that if they did not re-register by October 22nd, that they probably would not be able to vote. At least that's the way a lot of people interpreted it. They made it clear that people could register on Election Day later in the letter, but we got numerous phone calls, emails, comments on the Facebook and so forth, people concerned that they were not going to be allowed to vote November 6th because they had not done certain things. And that's not the case at all. What's going to happen is if they get to the voting place and they're not on the active list, they are to be checked on the book that we have called the inactive list. They can go ahead and vote and have their vote counted in the machine, but they have to re-register, put down the correct information, because the reason that they were taken off was because postcards were sent out
right
to all the voters asking them or telling them where they were supposed to vote and who they were allowed to vote for. And those postcards came back to the Board of Registrars across the state, and they were either put on the inactive list, or if they have not voted in the last two national presidential elections, then they were put on the inactive list.
Ron,
we're
Ron,
talking about over like an eight-year period or so.
Ron, is it your sense that this comes up, it's more of a gimmick by, I guess I would say, Democrats, because that appears to be where it's coming from. But is it your sense that this is just kind of a get-out-the-vote ploy?
I can't officially speak to that. I don't know what their motive is. I do know that it's caused us a bunch of headaches. I wish that people would realize that it's just a means of giving us an indication that people did not vote or we have incorrect information. If they give us the correct information, they can go ahead and vote. So that's pretty much what we've been trying to get out, but apparently some people aren't getting the word and they're beginning to panic.
Well, there you have it. Ron, thanks for calling. I guess it's good to get at least an official voice on this. But we're coming right back at you here in a few minutes. We're on Jeff Poor filling in for Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And it's Jeff Poor filling in for Sean Sullivan today on Midday Mobile. Turning up your voice, give us a call. Let us know what you think. 251-343-0106. Some good news today economically. The jobs report came in, as it always does this day at time of the month, the first of the Friday of the month, I think, traditionally. And we added 250,000 jobs to the roll, so that's certainly good news if you want Republicans to win, I think, because if we're really to believe this is a referendum on Donald Trump, and a lot of people think that's the case, especially in some of these states that are swing states, you know, that's kind of where they go, Republican, Democrat, depending on who's in the White House, then this is some tough news for Democrats to really run against. Maybe that's why people vote. People vote their pocketbook. I think a lot of the reason that the Republicans are as close as they are, and this is going to be a blowout for the party in power, is a lot of it's economic, that the economy is doing so well. And this isn't just one of those economies where people perceive it to be doing well, where you're told, well, the stock market's up and employment's down. I think you could see tangible evidence that the economy is doing well. You go in stores and you go in places and there's a little more activity. People are able to take vacations. Hotels are booked. You know, there's all these indicators that kind of give us an idea about the health of the economy, but I think the biggest indicator was the one that came out today with the employment numbers. There's a bunch of other little underlying statistics in those numbers. Hispanic employment's up at its highest. I think we got a record number of people in the workforce. So you have all these things going on, and Trump could go to these rallies where he's got them all over the country between now and Election Day and say, hey, look, you like this? Vote for me. Vote for my Republican colleagues.
And one of those stats that I really focused on when that report came out this morning, average hourly earnings rose 3.1% from last year. They said that's the best pay raises in nearly a decade. Pretty big.
And that's been the knock on a lot of these surges in jobs numbers that we've had over the years, that, yeah, more people are being employed, but the wages aren't going up. They're kind of dead-end jobs. There's lots of dead-end jobs or whatever you want to call them out there. But, I mean, maybe that's kind of – this is a lagging indicator, obviously, because we're talking about last month. But the more and more of these jobs get out there, you have the supply and demand curve. If people want to hire people, they have to pay a little bit better. That's just the facts of it.
Do you think – because it seems like, you know, the social – and not just on social media, but, you know, some people say they're socially liberal but fiscally conservative. But once people start, you know, once their pockets start filling up with some change and once they're able to go find a job and once the economy is doing so well, what kind of battle do you think is being fought there between people who aren't okay with what they believe President Trump stands for character-wise, socially, compared to what he's bringing for them economically? And just because the reason so many people voted for Trump to begin with, one of the main reasons was the businessman aspect of it, with him being a businessman, running the country like it's a business, get going again economically. But then you have so many that say, you know what, I'm no matter how much more money I'm making, I'm not going to vote for him because of this or this.
Well, think about this. A lot of people vote. They participated in the civic process of voting because they're mad about something, not because they're happy. You know, sometimes they things are going great. I'm going to go support my guy. You see that. I mean, those are the people you see at the rallies and stuff. But I think if Trump was really in trouble or Republicans were really, really in trouble, then there would be this dissatisfaction. And it could be for whatever reason. It could be because of Russia. It could be because, you know, it could be economic, but that's a harder one case to make. It could be you just don't like Donald Trump's tweets, you think he's unpresidential, and you just want to, you know, or it could be whatever, you're a Democrat, and you find him very unsavory. But I think with the economics of it, people look at it and they say, well, I'm not really that upset. It's a Tuesday night. Do I want to go vote? Things need to be okay, and maybe the election even slips their mind. I don't know, whatever, but people tend to vote because they're mad at something.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how hard they try, the Democrats haven't found that magic thing to get people upset. In 2006, the last midterm that they did really well, people were upset about the war. Okay? In 2010, when Republicans did so well, they were upset about Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
2014, they were upset about just Obama's policies in general. You didn't have a big wave election. The biggest thing came out of that was the Republicans took the Senate, right? So I think 2018, what are you mad at if you're a Democrat or you're just not voting for Trump? What are you upset about? Maybe you're upset about Trump himself, but I think that's becoming less and less of an issue. And I, you know, there's nothing you can really point to. No matter how hard people try, there's nothing you or the Democrats try. There's nothing tangible that they can say, well, he's colluding with the Russians. I know, last I checked, there's not a Soviet flag being raised over the White House. I mean, you know, like, what is the give and take there? What happens? What's the consequences? So this may play out. The Mueller probe may play out inevitably, and we may be talking about this in 2020. But as of Tuesday, when you go walk into your polling place, what are you voting on? And if you're even going to show up to vote, if you have a reason to vote, what's the motivation for Democrats to get out and vote? And I, you know, to me, the social issues, that's more of a play in maybe some of the southern states. Obviously, we got two amendments on the ballot. I think the abortion amendment and I think this Ten Commandments amendment made it on the ballot just as a ploy to get Republicans out to vote.
Interesting.
A good reason, right? So it's on the ballot. You know, there's a dedicated group of people in Alabama. They're going to show up to go vote on something, and the Ten Commandments is one of them. Those are your Roy Moore supporters, and you need them if you're Republican in some places. And I think the abortion issue is always a big topic in Alabama, and I think that gets a lot of people revved up. I think that gets your social conservatives out, and that's a big part of it, the electorate in Alabama. So those two things, I think, you know, but we get away from that, and we look more toward – we look more toward the sort of whatever the what Democrats are going to go out and vote for. I don't know that there's a such thing that exists.
Let's go to the phones really quickly before you have a guest coming up at the bottom of the hour, and we got 1 minute until the break. But right now we'll run to Thomas and Theodore. Hey, Thomas.
Hey, good afternoon.
Got about 30 seconds.
Jeff, this is the first time we've been head-to-head, and thank you for having me on.
No problem. Got about 30 seconds here, Thomas.
Okay, you know, I just disagree with you, Jeff, to the extent that somebody has to be mad or upset about something to go vote. I think there's a lot of people go vote because they're concerned about things and they want things better, and they have an idea that they want to say yes to that funding of that project. And it's not these kind of terms that you use, mad and upset. It roils the population. We got to reset and respect people and love people and stuff and be kind to each other. Thank
All
you.
Right. Thanks, Thomas.
Hey, thanks, Thomas. This is Jeff Poore filling in with Sean Sullivan with Dalton Orwig on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And it's Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan today, who's away taking a little time off. Joining us on the line now, we have Senator Dale Marsh, President of the Alabama Senate. He serves the folks in Calhoun County in East Alabama. Senator, thanks for coming on Midday Mobile.
Oh, Jeff, glad to be on.
Yeah, so we got big election Tuesday. I think that's on the front of everyone's mind. How are things going? And you know, I guess there's maybe one or two races that we need to keep an eye on in the Senate. But how are things looking from your end?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you're going to see the Republicans hold a supermajority in the Alabama legislature, both the Senate and the House. You know, I think the Senate will end up somewhere between 24 and 27. The House, about the same as it was at the last quadrennium. So both being super majorities, I just don't see this blue wave. I may be fooled like everybody else, but we've really got two Senate races that we're watching really close. That's the Larry Stutz race up in North Alabama.
Right.
And the Andrew Jones running against Craig Ford, who's running as an independent in Etowah. So those are the two that, based on our polling, are the closer races. Everything else we've been watching, if you believe the polling, it shows Republicans with anywhere from a 55 to 60% voting average. So we feel pretty good about where we are.
That Tom Watley race in Lee County, that was one that was kind of on the radar for a while, but it looks like it's kind of shifted in the late, like, well, maybe not even the late stages, but back toward Watley's favor.
Well, there again, we're watching all the races, but Senator Watley has done such a great job of working his district. He always does. I mean, he's very active in his district. I tell you, there's nobody could campaign any harder than Tom Watley has, and because of that, we just feel a lot better. Now, the key, Jeff, is in his race and all the races. Then again, the polling tells us that you've got a pretty good, solid, conservative Republican state. It is. Alabama is. But the fear we've always had is complacency, that voters just say, hey, it's Republican, I don't need to get out, everything's fine, and we can't have that. We worked really hard for the get out the vote effort, for people to get out and voice their opinion on the 6th of November.
Well, it looks to me you've got a lot of things going on. The obviously the statewide races at the top of the ballot, or you know what everyone's talking about, but I think over your way you do have kind of at least an interesting congressional race with Mallory Hagan and Mike Rogers, and you have, it looks to me, a very active Mike Rogers campaign kind of pushing votes out over, you know, or especially around your area. But that's got to help some, right?
Oh, it does. And the federal issues are what a lot of people pay attention to. And if they are interested in those issues, then right now, of course, you had the Kavanaugh hearings, which fired up a lot of Republicans. And then right behind that, you've got this group marching across Mexico toward the border. Those two issues, though they are in essence federal issues, they fire people up, and if they get out to vote in the congressional races, they're going to vote in the state races too. So You know, it's I think our base, based on that, should be fired up. But then again, you've got them fired up on the other side for the same two reasons. The question is, who's fired up more?
Yeah, well, I've always maintained it's really tough for Democrats in Alabama just because you can't really run as a Democrat. You've got to run, I guess, at best against the status quo or whatever it may be. And it appears to me that people are pretty happy with the job Kay Ivey's done coming out of the Bentley era. And I assume that's kind of what you're seeing, too.
Yeah, Kay's done a good job. I mean, I've worked with Kay, of course, in the Senate for years, and the economy's great. Typically, you would think if the economy's good, most people are pretty happy. And this has been an odd cycle, though, and I attribute that to the president. You know, all the good that he's done, and I think he's done a lot of good, but you know, he kind of ran on an anti-establishment platform, and that hurt Republicans as well. So we've had a really odd cycle where you've got this anti-incumbency out there, and even people who have done, in my opinion, an excellent job across the state, putting the state in the situation it is today based on the economy, and yet people are still, you know, act like they're, you know, they're angry at the incumbent.
So let's switch gears and kind of talk about what we're going to do or what you're looking at this next session. I guess the big topic right now, at least like we had a big jackpot in a couple of lotteries around the country, is this lottery issue. Where we are with that, and you talk to some people, and it looks like we're at least going to get another stab at it in the legislature. How do you feel about the lottery right now?
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, that's an odd situation. I mean, any polling we've done on the lottery in the last 4 or 5 years, even among Republicans, 65% are fine as long as they get a vote. So they're fine with it on the ballot. And for whatever reason, some of our members have just been real almost weak-kneed about bringing any lottery legislation. But I believe because of the sports, the position the feds have taken on the sports, what's it called? You know, that
sports betting yeah.
Issue. And then you've got, I think it was Mississippi most recently, or one of the states around us passed the lottery. I would be amazed not to see a lottery bill introduced. I think one will be. And I think it's one that it'll, you know, as pro tem of the Senate, if one gets upstairs or is introduced, I'll do all I can to get it on the floor for debate. Now, whether or not it gets out, we got one out, 2 years ago. If we can get one out again to the House, just have to see how it goes. But I do believe that there's an appetite more than ever to deal with the lottery bill.
So I was talking to your House counterpart yesterday, Speaker McCutcheon, and he thinks that the time is right to kind of do something with the gas tax. I know roads and bridges are a big issue now, and there's a lot of gridlock around the state, especially in the more populated areas. As the economy does well, you have like Mazda and Toyota coming in and building these manufacturing facilities, that you got to address this infrastructure. What do you think? Where are you on this on the gas tax thing right now?
You know, we've worked all through the break, several months, on getting different groups together to talk about infrastructure and what infrastructure should look like in the state of Alabama. And it's been some very good conversation. A lot of good information has been gathered. And I do believe that, one, is we want to be in a position, if the feds pass an infrastructure bill, as you know, anytime that happens, to take advantage of that, you have to be able to match it with state dollars.
Right.
So we want to be in a position to do that. We want to make sure, as we look into the future, that our ports, because we consider the ports infrastructure, and the reality is, if we could deepen the port down in Mobile, we could double the amount of freight coming in and out of the port. That, you look at the, I think the last count was right at 400 bridges throughout the state that were in need of replacement or repair. You look at major arteries that we've been repairing for years, but that's about it. We just got to ask ourselves, as a state, if we're going to remain competitive, are we going to have to address this infrastructure situation? And remember, the reality, and the voters, we've got to make sure everybody's educated on this. The reality is the last time a tax was put in place on infrastructure in Alabama was in 1992, 26 years ago. And the problem, it was a flat number. It wasn't a percentage. If it had been a percentage, it would have moved with the price of fuel, and we'd have seen more revenue in the state over the last 26 years. But it was a flat number. And what compounds that problem is there's been no growth because most people are driving cars today that get a third more or more miles per gallon. So they're basically driving more miles on the road for the same amount of tax revenue paid in. So actually less revenue paid in. So it's a dilemma we've got to ask ourselves. I think there is an appetite to look at it. Where it goes, I don't know, but there will be serious discussion. It will have to start in the House. But I will continue to talk to the Speaker. I'm going to give him the information I've gathered over the summer based on the meetings we've had, and to see if we want to address this issue and look at a long-term infrastructure plan for the state.
Senator, can we hold you over for the break for a couple more minutes? I want to get to,
sure.
I guess, education and a little bit about kind of the hospital situation. This is Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan on Mobile's FM Talk 106.5. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 251-343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And this is Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Del Marsh joining us on the show here, who graciously held over during the break. Senator Marsh, you recently spoke with the Calhoun County Chamber of Commerce, and you mentioned something that caught my attention, at least, that you're going to make education a big priority, and we're looking at maybe the biggest education budget in the history of the state in this next session.
That's right, Jeff. I mean, we should have a record budget in education, but at the same time, we've also been working on a comprehensive education plan for the state of Alabama. We've never had that. We've had our different areas of education putting together their goals and expectations that haven't communicated. So our goal is to have a seamless pre-K all the way through higher education plan, and it may take some legislation requirements once we get back in session. We're not sure, but we plan on having something ready to go in place by the time we come back in March. Because, you know, the education issue affects so much. Obviously, we want our children to have the best education possible. We want our young adults in vocational training to have the best opportunity. But, you know, the lack of education in the state of Alabama has caused a real problem. We've got overcrowded prisons. So 60% of our prisoners don't have a high school education. There's a direct correlation. You look at health care in the state of Alabama, obesity is a problem. I think that's attributed to bad education on health issues. So it affects so many things that we want to put a real emphasis on education as we move into this session.
Some of these, I know the Montgomery Board of Education and maybe the Baldwin County Board of Education, they've kind of lashed out at this Alabama Accountability Act. And I don't know what's going on there. You hear about the AEA making a comeback and all these things, and you see these stories kind of trickling around. Is there something going on there, and do you think they're going to try to make there's at least going to be some political pressure applied to try to do something to the Alabama Accountability Act?
There may be a run at that, but I'm fully supportive of the Accountability Act. Of course, that was my bill some years ago. The reality is this, that we have failing systems in Alabama. Our math scores are 49th in the country. Our reading scores are 46, and that's on the eighth grade level. And you can't accept that. Now, we've got some great educators out there. We've got some great schools, but we've got a lot of areas we've got problems, and we can't just ignore that. And there is no accountability system in education. They have no competition. And the Accountability Act really basically puts some competition out there. These kids and parents who are in failing systems can take those dollars and go to another public school. They have a chance to get out of that failing system. And to me, that's what we should be doing, is giving parents options when they are stuck in a failing system. And it amazes me that the public system And it's the union, it's the AEA union that's fighting this because they want no competition. They do not want to be held accountable.
Well, I agree with you there. I just the timing it seems to be all of a sudden. But well, let's talk about the healthcare thing. And I guess you have one gubernatorial candidate kind of running around the state on a bus talking about the expansion of Medicaid. I kind of want to know what your thoughts are on that. They're using the hospital closing situation, which I would argue probably has a little bit to do with what's tied to the wage index, a lot of things like that. But specifically, what were you looking at this session to kind of address some of these problems with the healthcare system?
I can tell you, we've got a Republican-controlled legislature, and they have no appetite to expand Medicaid. Medicaid already gets the bulk of the education budget that we have discretion over. We're trying to control costs. We're doing a pretty good job with that. So we're going to continue to try to control those costs. And until we get those costs under control, we're not going to expand it.
Well, I mean, there's no way that's going to happen. Is there anything else that's going to come kind of across the transom when we talk about healthcare next session?
Not that I see, Jeff. I think, like I said, I don't see. We do all we can to control the cost, but we're not going to expand it.
All right. Well, there you have it. Finally, wrap it up on this. I guess you're kind of keeping an eye on the elections and stuff. How do you feel about Republicans nationally? Do you you talked about the Kavanaugh effect and stuff, some of the stuff going on statewide, but kind of curious to hear what you think about what's going to happen nationally and where that sets us for 2020.
Yeah, I mean, I believe that the Senate holds. In fact, I think you're going to pick up a few seats in the Senate, U.S. Senate. On the House, I do believe we'll lose some Republican seats, but I'm not convinced you'll lose control. I think it's going to be close. And I think if that happens, that's a huge win for President Trump if he just holds the House. And we'll move forward. We'll see how it goes. But I'm not buying into this blue wave. That's my opinion.
Right. And finally, I guess one of the questions, you hear your name mentioned as a possible challenger for Doug Jones in 2020. Is that something that's even on your radar that you're even thinking about?
You know, it's obvious I'm looking at that. I mean, I want someone to take that seat back as a Republican. I think Jones is a one-termer, and somebody's got to challenge him. So, you know, we'll see. Right now, I'm focused on winning my race on Tuesday, but I'm going to leave an option to look at that when the time comes.
All right. Well, there you have it, Senator Marsh. I want to thank you for joining the show today, and we'll definitely keep an eye on where things are heading, especially coming out of the election and into next session.
Thank you, Jeff. It's been my pleasure to be on.
All right. Thanks very much. There you got it. Dale Marsh from Anniston, Alabama. He's president of the Senate. I think it's kind of interesting that he has expressed his interest in running in 2020 against Doug Jones. We've heard some of the names. We've heard Bradley Byrne, obviously. I think there'll be some others that will come along. But if you're asking me right now to kind of handicap it, I think those are your two front runners. I think Marsh has kind of a better geographic reach, but I think Bradley's got a way head start on a lot of the things you got to do to kind of get your name out and get known around the state. This is Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Let us know what you think, 251-343-0106.